This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
In victory or defeat, true fans never quit. Champions are made by the fans. That's why 5-Hour Energy is adding a new limited edition Stand the Fan 5-Hour Energy Shot to their roster. Fuel your team's spirit with a taste as sweet as an overtime win. Packed with an all-star lineup of B vitamins, nutrients, and 230 milligrams of caffeine, it keeps you feeling energized, loud, and proud all game long. Check out 5hourenergy.com to grab your Stand the Fan shot today.
Crown topic of the day. Started the show a couple hours ago talking about, of course, the article that came out yesterday, the scathing piece, really exposing Woody Johnson for meddling and all that goes on with the Jets. Look, we know he's the owner. He's going to have some say, BT, but the way that he handled things with firing Saleh without letting anybody know, preventing some trades, you know, firing Joe Douglas' right-hand man, Rex Hogan, just the mess, and now getting rid of Douglas before the contract expires. The bigger thing, there are two issues here. We'll get to the quarterback situation moving forward, but the biggest issue to me is that clearly the Jets need somebody established to come in here and change things, right?
Yep.
Well, how are you supposed to get that now with all this stuff being out there in the open? This is why Belichick rips Woody. He knows all this stuff, but now there is no secret. Like, we now all know all this stuff. The Jets are a mess. How are you going to get somebody worth anything in here?
Well, the way you do it, if it's like a Vrabel or somebody established, John Gruden, I think Gruden's a little different because right now I don't think team's going to knock down his door based on the emails, so John might have to be a little bit more willing.
Boomer did say last week, though, that Gruden was interested and teams uh-huh. were also showing interest.
Well, listen, I'm going to defer to Boomer with that stuff, but I don't think that there will be, let's say if Vrabel's got 9 suitors, maybe Gruden's got 3 or 4, I do think there'll be an organization or two, maybe more, that kind of says, I don't know if we want to go down this road. And what, even though he's not suspended and he should be able to be employed here, talking about Gruden, I think there might be a few teams that stay away. But obviously, you know, Boomer's Boomer, so he would know more than me about this stuff. I think that when you look at Woody specifically, he's desperate, which means he's now dangerous because he has no default setting that has worked for him. And when you have a desperate, dangerous, affluent man, this is what you have. You have dysfunction. You have a complete inner implosion from the top to the lowest level, and it's anarchy. And it is really anarchy. Like, I don't really use that word too much pertaining to sports, but inwardly, it is anarchy. They are an absolute disaster, and I think you do it. You get out of it by giving somebody a ton of money and looking them in the eye and then having the lawyers write up in the contract, you have all the power. And if that's not done, and you know Woody's willing to do that, then you're going to have the same cycle of, all right, let's give this guy a shot with no real track record, and that's something I have zero interest in at this point.
Yeah, and then for me, so that needs to take place. They need to have the owner, obviously, get out of the way, hire people, say, you have my word, I'm not going to do this, I'm not going to meddle, whatever. And even then, who the hell knows?
Well, if it's in a contract, you've got to abide by it.
Even as the owner?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, there's 100%.
Do you think he'd put that in the contract?
I probably not, but if he wants to get serious about actually being good at his job, he should consider it.
And then for me, the other thing, and this is a totally different part of the conversation, but just spinning it forward to next year. Now, ultimately, I would let the new general manager and head coach decide on who the quarterback is going to be, but I think the Jets and Woody Johnson have already made their decision on Rodgers not coming back next year, and I think that's a huge mistake. I still think there's value in Rodgers being the stopgap quarterback, a guy who can maybe win games next year, and then transitioning to whoever, if they draft somebody, however they want to figure out the next guy. But I still believe, if you take a team picture of the New York Jets this year, and you're going to have to X out a lot of guys now because they're not here anymore, but I see one winner, and that's Aaron Rodgers, and I still believe there's value there. Easy to pick on him and easy to blame him, but I think it's unfair the position that they put him in to be the be-all, end-all. He's not supposed to be the general manager and the head coach. Now, part of that is on them for giving him the leeway, and then part of that's on him for bringing certain guys in that just weren't going to work here, but Rodgers, to me, still can be an asset to any organization. I think it's a mistake pushing him out the door already.
Then he can go and find the franchise that deems him as an asset, and he can go and try to win for them. Because for me, it's over here. No interest. I don't think he could play anymore. Certainly not at a level that's going to be able to elevate whatever the hell they become, this moribund mess. He doesn't lead. Boy, that is just a depressing scouting report. It's true, though. He doesn't lead. It's over. And I'm not here to denigrate him. He's one of the most talented players I've ever seen. Didn't work here. They gave it a shot. And I said after the Cardinals game, I'm truly appreciative that Woody went out and did give it a shot, because the thought was in line with what a lot of us thought. Hey, the roster is a little further along than people think, despite the record recently. You get the right quarterback here with this defense, blah, blah, blah. Little uptick in offense. Jets can make a run. The Bills are not beyond reproach. Miami's Miami, and the Patriots are obviously rebuilding. So it is all failed. It is all gone incredibly awry, and I have zero interest watching him play next year for the Jets.
BT and Sal on the Fan, our friends at Town Fair Tire, remind you that at Town Fair Tire, you always get the guaranteed lowest price on name brand tires from Connecticut to Maine. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. Anthony's in Yonkers. What's up, Ant?
Hey, guys. First of all, let me just say, I listen to you guys every day at the gym. Appreciate you.
Thank you.
I got to be honest with that, and I love listening to you guys get me going, but today you got me going the wrong way. I'm on the treadmill. I almost fell off. you guys minimize, and I hear it all the time, what Rex did here. Now, Rex was not a perfect coach, but can you name one other head coach in Jet history, guys with back-to-back championship games? Is there any Jet coach who's won 4 playoff games like Rex did? By the way, he did it with a rookie freaking quarterback, and then he did it again. He went 8-8 with another rookie quarterback in Geno Smith. To me, that looks like the Super Bowl at this point, how bad we are. My point I'm trying to make is, and then I've heard you say, BT, I heard you say this before, too. Right. Oh, he was a disaster in Buffalo. Hey, BT, by the way, he was 15-16 in Buffalo. 15-16 right now with the Jets, again, looks like the 49ers are in their heyday. I mean, we have not been relevant. We have not been good. We have not been fun since Rex left. Now, putting that all aside, guys, I don't know if he's the right guy for it, but we can do a hell of a lot worse. But think about this for 1 second. Woody Johnson is the reason why Rex failed, and I'll tell you why if you give me 1 minute, or a few seconds,
good.
I should say.
Good.
If you think about after 2009 and 2010, when he was trying to sell tickets to fill the freaking stadium like he always does, always about the money.
The PSLs.
After that, in 2011, who did he bring in? Plaxico Burress. After that, who did he bring in? Tebow. He did nothing for Rex after. He let that roster go. Rex is not the GM, by the way.
Uh-huh.
Tannenbaum was a GM. He's the head coach.
Well, yeah. Firing that, Tannenbaum was a mistake.
Kamen, hold on.
Hold on for one second, please. Yeah. You've been talking. We're good to go. We'll have the conversation, but just let me get a point in here. They fired Tannenbaum, which to me was a mistake, and then they hired Idzik, which was a disaster, but Rex had a lot of say on that roster. Remember, he's talking about the Terminator, the fullback, Connor. Oh, got to get this guy. So let's not make it like Rex didn't have his imprint on who he would select with some of these draft picks.
First of all, again, I don't dispute that. My point I'm trying to make is it was Woody who did nothing for Rex in terms, because look what he did in 2009, 2010. We know Rex can drive a Cadillac, right? Can he drive a Chevy? I don't know. But
the record says no.
Hold on a sec. You say no, but again, look what we've had since he's left.
Hold on a second.
Yes, sir.
I respect and I don't completely disagree when you basically, and your main point is we're selling Rex a little short. Okay, that's fine. I got you. But
very much.
No, well, we could agree to disagree on that. Whatever. But all right, I'll give you a little credence to what you said. I got you. But what the mistake that you're making is you are elevating somebody who was average or slightly above average, and because nothing else the Jets do has been good, you're elevating him to a spot that is more than he is. And that's the difference between us.
Okay, so you keep saying average. Do you know how hard it is to get the back-to-back championship games? Thing is this.
Right.
All right. You make it sound like we've gone there four or five times.
I got news, Dan. I'm sorry, I'm not a co-host, Dan. I just gave it two minutes, buddy.
And thank you for the call. We appreciate checking in. And I understand what he's trying to say.
I do, too.
The most accurate thing you just said, Anthony, was that we could do a lot worse. And you have done a lot worse. You could also do a lot better. Rex Ryan was pedestrian at best. He had two terrific seasons, and I've said this from day one, so to say it, 15 years later, whatever it's been, it was the same thing I felt then. They did it. Rex did it with Mangini's team. From there, they got worse. The first 2 years were the best. 9-7, 11-5. By the way, they weren't even great in the regular season. In comparison to what we've seen in the last 15 years, it is great, but in reality, 9-7, 11-5, that's it. He went 8-8, 6-10, 8-8, 4-12, and then with the Bills, 8-8 and 7-8. That's not good. You could do a lot worse. Jets have done a lot worse. You could also do a lot better.
Here's the other thing that he would not have if he became the head coach of the Jets. He would not have the lieutenants that he had previously. Somebody like Bart Scott coming in who knew the Baltimore way. And listen, I know Bart real. I did TV with Bart. I love Bart. I know him well. You guys know him from TV. I know him more as a person. He is that guy. Who he is, it's not like a show. Bart is a leader. He is a natural alpha. So Rex had the benefit of basically unleashing Bart. News for you. When Bart, stepped in somebody's grill to say, hey, listen, this is how we're going to do it, you're probably going to listen to Bart because that's how Bart is. So because Rex is no longer coaching, he's not bringing anybody with him, which accelerated the development of the Jets and helped with the culture. If Rex is fully responsible for establishing that culture, is he going to be as effective? My guess is no.
Do you think?
And I'm not willing to take that chance.
I do think Rex Ryan, I wanted to hire Rex this year in season. And I do think if you hired Rex Ryan, the Jets would be significantly better next year than they were this year. But beyond that, how good would they be? Is he really going to build an offense? I don't think Rex cares to build an offense. I think he wants to build a tough team that's going to punch you in the mouth, be bullish-like or bully-like, and go out there and try to win some football games. And you will. You're also going to lose a lot. I don't think he was a great in-game head coach. And I don't think he was a really good head coach. He was just, he got the players to play hard. There was an element of that. And he's a great defensive coordinator. I would hire him in a set. I'd love to have John Gruden and Rex Ryan. Have Gruden be the head coach. Have Rex be the DC. He doesn't want to be that.
Well, certainly not here it is. He wanted to be that elsewhere. Dallas, some other spots. He's not coming here to be second in charge.
Did he want that? I thought he always wanted to be the head coach.
He was kicking around. He was interested in some spots. No, he was trying to get back in the game as a DC. Yeah, I mean, let somebody else figure out the experiment with Rex 2.0. I'm not interested. I'm just not interested. All right, we'll get him on the show or get him on the station. Hey, amazing interview. Fantastic. Oh, Rex's first press conference. Great. Is he bringing 3-4 offensive linemen who can play like he had the first time around? He had everything in his favor. He had guys that he brought from Baltimore who knew how to win and were true alphas that can lead and take Rex's message and then infiltrate it to the rest of the locker room. He had a really, really good offensive line. That offensive line was great.
Who built that offensive line? The guys before
him. It wasn't Rex.
Yeah, right.
And he also had the best corner of my lifetime in Darrell Revis.
Right.
We thought Soft was good the first 2 years.
And Darrell Revis ran circles around him. And he knew how to use him too. And by the way, maybe there was something to the way Sala was using Sauce. That remember we were like, hey, why are you moving him around? Just stick him on the best guy. Maybe he saw weaknesses in Sauce that have now been exposed a little bit. Anyway, point is, Rex Ryan did not get the job done here.
Oh.
End of story. He had an opportunity. He's not a great head coach.
I agree.
And I think you said it best when he's over-evaluated or over-elevated, whatever word you just said was perfect, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Because
there's a false elevation. Yeah, I think I probably said something like that.
Because of by Joe B, by other Jeff fans, Rex. Because he's the only guy to have some semblance of success.
Yeah.
You shouldn't falsely elevate him just because everything else was awful. He wasn't good enough either.
Measuring the success and trying to equate it to real success for a bad team is not the right way to operate. I mean, imagine imagine Met fans saying, like, hey, Art Howe, I mean, listen, we haven't had it really good. And you go back to, like, you either win or you don't. You're either you cut through or you don't. He cut through because he's an interesting personality. But Rex is the coach of the Jets. I would actually be really, forget about not being interested, I would be bothered by that.
Sal,
I really would be.
Sal's in Katona. What's up, Sal?
Hi. About Rex, first of all, he got another chance in Buffalo and humiliated himself before monster success in Buffalo now.
Yep.
He was brought in and sent home pretty quickly. And on top of it, which doesn't get any play at all, was there was never a more reckless decision than when he inserted Sanchez in the fourth quarter of that preseason that ended his career.
He wanted to beat the Giants. I remember I was doing a show afterward on the overnight. I remember, I mean, that
he should have been thrown. If I owned that team, I would not have allowed him back in the locker room after that decision.
Yeah, thank you for the call. I forgot about that.
Yeah,
I know. I mean, I respect the fact that he wanted to win, but...
At what cost?
Well, at a significant cost.
You know, if we're going to bring back anybody that was with the Jets at some point, I wouldn't mind having Chad Pennington as a quarterback's coach. Like that, I'd be okay with that. I mean, Chad's greatest strength was always his cerebral nature. Yeah. Didn't have a good arm.
Is he coaching? What's his deal?
Yeah, he's been coaching for, okay, I think, a high-level high school and some other spots. Like, he's definitely involved in the game. You know, his brain was his greatest asset, and his ball placement was phenomenal.
Did the Bills go right? I'm sorry, BT, cut you up. They went right from Rex to Sean McDermott? I think that is
Was there a one-year gap, or was he already on the staff and elevated? I mean, because Rex was fired with a game to go, right, in that season? I think he only made 15 games that year.
Just had it up here, and I got
2 years with the Bills. And by the way, he didn't humiliate himself. I want to correct that caller. With the Buffalo Bills, he wasn't 2-12 or 2-14, whatever it may have been.
2016, no, 8-8, and then 7-8, and he got fired before the final game in the 2016 season. And then McDermott took over in 2017. 9-7, 6-10, 10-6, 13-3, 11-6, 13-3, 11-6, 9-2 this year. I get that they had Josh Allen, but it wasn't right out of the gate either.
No.
And by the way, he also had to develop Josh Allen. I mean, come on, you think Rex could have done that if they stuck with Rex? I don't think so. They got better after getting rid of Rex Ryan.
There is no way that would happen. I can't prove it, but I just strongly think it would not happen.
Yeah, I don't either. And it's not to rip on Rex.
No.
Rex was fine when he was here. He was fun. Would he be entertaining? Actually, he'd be a great thing for us.
Yeah.
To having Rex's personality and evaluating him, whether it's ripping him, praising him, whatever it would be, he would be entertaining. He's great for sports talk. He's just not a good head coach. BT and Sal on the Fan, will continue with your calls on the other side. We've got to get into the Soto stuff as well.
Oh,
it was an NJ.com report yesterday from Bob Clappish.
Of Change. You ever hear that song, Winds of Change? It's a good one.
Yeah, by Simon & Schuster. Who sang that?
No, not Simon & Garfunkel.
Okay. Yeah, I guess BT and Sal back on the Fan, 888-808-1019. The number to call. We'll get back to your calls here in just a second. We've done a lot today. In case you missed anything, check it out on the free Odyssey app. You know, it hit me yesterday, BT, and I didn't bring it up till today because we just didn't have time yesterday, but do you think Boomer is jealous of Joe Burrow? Like, I know he's a Bengal fan or a root for the Bengals because he was there, but ultimately, Joe Burrow, even with the loss the other night, like Joe Burrow is doing things that just no Bengals quarterback has done before. Boomer won an MVP, was in a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
But do you think there's a part of him that's like, man, this Joe Burrow's better than I? Joe Burrow's going to be the best Bengals quarterback. He's going to surpass Boomer Esiason.
Yeah, no, I don't doubt that. Boomer was really, really good. Joe Burrow is insane. Also, do I think that Boomer's jealous? Like, even if he had that inclination to be jealous, which I don't think that he does, I think the moment that he sees Joe Burrow walking through the bowels of a stadium looking like a complete clown, not knowing how to dress, That dissipates. I mean, Boomer's got to look at him like, what are you doing, dude?
Boomer's a man's man.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Well, do you see the way Burrow dresses?
Yeah.
Do you see this?
Yeah, I mean.
It's horrendous.
Who cares how he dresses? He throws
the
football. Well,
dresses like a clown.
Do you think Carson Palmer was as good as Boomer?
I think that Carson Palmer was tremendous. Oh, yeah. Also went to the Cardinals and did well.
Right.
Now, you got to understand, when Boomer was playing, two things. I'm not trying to be evasive, but I'll give you the answer. Two things. Number one, when Boomer was playing, I didn't watch the NFL the way I watch it now. I don't mean with frequency. Right. I mean with an intellectual eye or you know, whatever, an awareness of play call or deficiencies. I'm watching score. You know what I'm saying? It's just different when you're young. So, number one. Number two, I don't know if Boomer was unleashed now. And, at Maryland had some of these concepts that are wide open and, you know, screen passes and some other things. Not that Boomer couldn't throw a screen pass, but you know what I mean? Where the completion percentage soars, you get some easy checkdowns that make the stats look a lot better. You get a receiver who's 6'3", 6'4", instead of these, you know, 175-pound receivers like back in the day. I don't know what Boomer would be today. I bet you he would be, but I bet you'd be better if Boomer was one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL back then, which he was for a couple of years. I would surmise that with the same training and schemes, he would be one of the better quarterbacks today.
Okay, so let me just ask you again: is Boomer better than Carson, or was Carson Palmer better than Boomer?
Pure talent, I think Carson Palmer was better.
Interesting. I would still go Boomer. Like, if I'm looking at, and I agree with you, like, I was young, but I still appreciate Boomer as a player and watched enough to know, and also just know the history, and the Bengals haven't had a great history. But I would still say, if I'm looking at the best quarterback in the history of the Cincinnati Bengals franchise, I would say Boomer more so than Carson Palmer. Joe Burrow, though, is going to surpass
Yes.
Boomer. And that's why I was thinking, I wonder how Booms really feels about
this. I don't think he cares.
Okay.
Why, you think he does?
I mean, would
you obviously think there's a sense
you,
of... No, I don't think I would.
If you were the greatest first baseman in the history of Marist, and all of a sudden somebody comes up and is starting to take over, wouldn't that, you know, make you feel a little less?
I don't think so. I really don't.
I would be bothered, I think.
And listen, I'm not trying to say I don't have an ego. Yeah. I do, but I think that those things...
Maybe not bothered, but just like...
Yeah, maybe wistfully wishing that I was still playing or that God gave me more talent. I mean, sure, I think we all have those private thoughts and conversations, but jealousy?
Well,
I don't think Boomer's jealous at all.
Yeah, fair enough. But think about it. To be the greatest quarterback in the history of an NFL franchise, that's like... If you get Hall of Fame, that to me would be more important than Hall of Fame.
Well, but yeah.
The greatest quarterback that ever played for a said franchise, that's a great
honor.
It is.
That's true.
And now it's going to go to Joe Burrow.
Stats here. What's his best touchdown year? Like, to me, this is reflective of the NFL back then. I was just looking at Carson Palmer. Yeah, I know we're talking about Boomer and Burrow. Mm-hmm. Carson was really good. Yeah. Don't forget, he got his knee ripped up early.
I remember. He was good. Maybe he was on track to maybe surpass Boomer, but he never got there.
I just think he had a better arm. I don't know. Let's see.
Good player.
Let's see. Boomer's best.
Yeah.
It's better over here. AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
But the numbers aren't comparable because
of when
he played.
Well, that's what I'm saying. He's a victim of the modern NFL, much like, you know.
But then just forget about the numbers and just watch the two play and what they meant to the franchise.
I know what you're saying. I'll tell you, put it this way.
I mean, you can't beat that.
I mean this, and I have no reason to suck up to Booms. I love him.
Yeah.
There's a genuine affection for Boomer. I respect him, and I love him. If Burrow even wants to get into it, it's not going to be the announcer Boomer was. I can tell you that. Boomer's going to get him there.
It does sound like a suck up.
It's the truth. 20 years on the NFL today.
And he was replaced by Matt Ryan.
I'm surprised they got rid of Boomer.
He did sound.
Boomer doesn't need me to defend him. Boomer was great on that show.
No, I love Boomer. I was just thinking about him. I'm like, man, Burrow is so unbelievable.
I know he is. I understand that.
He's not going to be the broadcaster Boomer was.
Burrow walks around like a clown, like a half a child, the way he dresses.
Dude, he dresses
like an idiot.
He's a stud quarterback.
I'm the stud.
You could dress however you want if you throw it like that.
I'll go with Boomer in the old school suits. That's my style.
BT and Sal. I'll do the double breasted.
Not that old school. Although double breasted came back a little bit.
BT and Sal.
Boom-pa.
BT and Sal. Oh, the fan Mike is in Brooklyn. Mike, what's on your mind?
Hey, guys. So I have a three-step plan to fix the New York Jets.
Ooh.
And frankly, I think it could be I think it could be applied to any organization throughout professional sports, but the Jets are in need of it most at this time.
Okay, let's hear the three bullet points without going too deeply into each one. I want to actually get all three. Number one is, go ahead, Mike.
Okay, number one is we need to find a proven candidate to run this organization. I'm not talking about a general manager. I'm saying we need a president of football operations.
Okay.
Now,
we get a new owner? Is that off the table, new ownership? Just checking.
This plan does not factor in an ownership change, but part three of it does include or pertain to ownership.
Can I take a guess?
All right.
Can I take a guess of who?
Sure.
Curtis Martin.
Sure. Sure. Why not?
You didn't have a name. I'm sorry. I thought you had names. I just was thinking maybe that would be a good idea.
I have names for part two.
Okay. Okay.
For part two. Okay. So that's part one, a president of football operations. Part two is we hire a dictator as head coach. Okay, we don't need any more of these guys to come in and be best friends with the players, sloppy penalties, delay of games, lackluster effort. That's got to go.
All for it.
That's got to go. Yeah. Number three, and this is if Woody doesn't sell, which he's not gonna, he needs to just go away. He needs to follow the James Dolan method of take your hands off, go away, go to London, go do whatever you got to do, let your asset appreciate, and be gone. Be gone. Now, I can get into names. I can get into specifics if you guys want.
No, I mean, I think that that's pretty good, Mike, and thank you for the call. And I don't disagree. The main part that I like there is I like the idea of a, I don't know if dictator is the right word to use, but a no-nonsense head coach that's going to come in and do it his way, not placate anybody, whether it's the owner, the GM, the players. I want a no-nonsense guy that's going to clean this thing up from top to bottom. You know, as far as Woody going out of the way, you know, I'm trying to think about it, BT. Does Dolan, is he really out of the way, or did he finally hire somebody who he trusts the way that he did Isaiah, but the difference is Leon Rose actually has a clue as to how to build a basketball team. I'm not sure the inner workings. We have no idea because neither of them barely speak. Leon Rose doesn't address the media at all.
Mm-hmm.
So Dolan is kind of taking a back seat, but we see the results, which we love. I don't know if Dolan is hands off, or just that he hired the right guy to be the perfect balance.
To allow him to fade more into the background.
Yes.
That is the money question. I don't know the full answer. My best guess is that Dolan has finally learned that he had to try to take a new route to get to where he was going to go. And when you decide to do that, it requires a ton of patience. And when you rebuild anything, there's going to be moments where you look around and you say, geez, this just doesn't feel right. Are we doing it the right way? Do we have the right people? You know, that brick by brick, that slow, methodical process, it's very much without reward early, all right? But if you can get over that hump and all the emotional baggage that comes with it where you question yourself, generally it's going to be pretty sunny on the other side.
Yeah, well, there was a time where we thought a couple years, was it not last year but the year before that, was it last year that Tibbs could have been fired?
Remember, I never said fire.
No. But there was an early bad start.
Well, last year they didn't start out great.
I think it might have been years ago, though. The year before, maybe they beat the Cavs in the playoffs. I feel like, I don't know, there was some thought like, uh-oh, here we go again. It could be another quick trigger to fire the Knicks head coach. But
because people questioned his ceiling. That's what it was. Not like, is he competent, but what's Tom Thibodeau's ceiling?
But either way, and then Dolan maybe not having the patience for it to see it through. Mm-hmm. They saw it through, and look where we are now. So, and maybe that was Leon Rose keeping the foot off the gas and saying, like, hey, no, this is the guy. We need to stick with this. Whereas Woody doesn't have that person that he's hired that can either, like, I think Woody's, we brought this up yesterday. Remember I was telling you somebody that covered the NFL gave me some of the names that I wouldn't even know, the president, some guy, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then that came out in the Athletic a little bit with some of those names. Like, whoever his right-hand guys are that aren't football guys, they're a problem. But there are people that Woody trusts, but he shouldn't be trusting them with football decisions. That's the issue.
Well, the problem is when you have somebody with so much power and clout and affluence, and generally there's power and clout attached to affluence, you need special people to deviate from that person's wishes and look them in the eye or her in the eye and say, hey, listen, boss, I got it, but I don't think you're right on this one. That takes a special person, a person not only of conviction, but of enough accomplishment to feel as if they have the latitude to say that. And when it's the same people in the same room, and the room is a room that is, I don't mean to sound, it's going to sound more blunt than I want it to. When it's a room full of losers, mm-hmm. not in life, in the football conventional sense, nobody really has that inner belief or juice or cachet to say, no, Woody, can't do it. It's the wrong move. You can't do this.
And the best case, the best case is that Woody understands that he's been a part of the problem, gets out of the way, hires somebody, and lets them go. But if it stays this way, it's not like you can't win, because we've seen Rex have success with this team. And other guys have come close to being a player. It's not like you can't win at all. It's that you'll never have the sustained success that you truly want to have with the current structure of Woody behaving the way that he's behaving.
You nailed it. I mean, that's it. That's what proves to be the hardest thing for these teams to achieve. And we make it so simple on the air, but boy, oh boy, these people, they have PhDs in messing up. They really do.
We do make it sound simple, but they make it look hard to win a game. Like, it's not this hard. BT and Sal on the Fan. More of your calls when we come back. 888-808-1019.
And a little birdie has just told me, did Mr. Hal waltz up to a microphone, have a couple things to say before it?
Well, we've got some quotes from him, yes.
We will do that coming up next. In addition to the possible winds of change with Mr. Soto, that Sal referenced a couple times today, suddenly not so gung-ho talking about Soto. Why are you, buddy?
I was trying to think of Teddy Roosevelt, speak softly. I
carry a big stick? Now you're going to start doing that?
No, not me.
Oh, I got you.
Steve Cohen.
Okay.
We don't need to hear from the king. Money! It's a crime. All right, BT and Sal back on the Fan. So, Hav, educate us here on what's going on with Hal. We'll get to the NJ.com report from Clappish coming up in a minute, but I guess there's bigger news today or newer news today with Hal Steinbrenner speaking. Where is he talking?
I'm not really sure, but I know Tim Healey has all his quotes. So, speaking to somebody somewhere. I'm not sure exactly.
Okay, so give us some of the money quotes here.
My boy getting a little feisty? Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, so he said, Hal Steinbrenner on the Yankees meeting with Juan Soto. We, quote unquote, we had a good meeting. Mm. It was very honest. He said it lasted a couple of hours. How confident is Hal that Yanks will sign Soto? Quote unquote, no idea, but we'll be in the mix.
Okay, that means nothing to me so far.
Doesn't sound too confident to me, but yeah, you're right. Like,
we'll
it's a
be
wash.
In the mix. No kidding, there's five or six teams meeting.
I'd hope. Jeez. I mean, yeah.
Also, the importance of keeping Juan Soto, especially in the context of fans' desires. Quote unquote, I've got ears. I know what's expected of me.
Okay, a little better. We're getting warm, Hal.
Mm, okay. I like it.
Heating up a little bit.
And then specifically on losing Juan Soto to the Mets, would it hurt more than losing other players? Hal Steinbrenner, no, as I said, we're going to be in the mix for Soto. If it doesn't work out, it's going to hurt a little bit no matter where he goes.
Fair.
I don't really believe that last part. I don't think he's fully honest, but I also understand that it's probably not beneficial to be honest there.
Let's just have some fun for a second.
It would crush us if he goes to the Mets. We'd be the second team and perceptual. I mean, what was he supposed to say?
Well,
go ahead. Let's have a little fun.
What do you think his father would say? You know he wouldn't say that.
He should say, hey, son, ship up. You're a Steinbrenner. Wake up.
Well, no, I'm saying,
he should say that from heaven.
I'm saying, what would he spend whatever it takes. What would he say if he were asked that same question?
He'd say, mere pittance in my existence, no matter what we're the Yankees. You know, he wouldn't even say the Mets. He would just say, we're the Yankees, and we are prepared to act like
We're not losing to anybody.
Period.
We're the Yankees. We're not losing to anybody. If he doesn't want to stay here, then he's got the problem. Like, this is on him. I'm going to give him the most money. Why wouldn't he want to be here? We're the pinstripes. We've got the pride. We've got the history. We've got the dollars. We've got the team that went to the World Series. Like, I'm not saying Hal was wrong in anything that he said. I'm not saying it was bad. He didn't say anything bad, but there was an expectation, love him or hate him, that his father set, and the way he operated set the table for the way that Yankee fans feel about their team. And anything less than that to me is
below the Yankee way.
It's not enough.
Below the standards. Is there more, Hoff? I hope that there's a little more.
I mean, there's no other quotes. I do have from Gary Phillips. He's a beat writer for the Daily News. He says that Hal added, he hasn't thought about a walkaway number for Juan Soto yet. Mm. Same for an overall payroll number.
So he's open.
Okay, that's good.
That is
now let's pair those quotes today with the Bob Clappish NJ.com story, where there was one quote in there in particular that caught my attention. Reading that story yesterday, I felt encouraged from a Yankee perspective more so than I did in anything prior. And again, take these reports and comments and with a grain of salt. Like right now, everybody's guessing. Everybody's trying to be first or have some insider information. And I think it's minimal because I don't think the Soto camp is letting anybody know what they think. The teams that have met with him can certainly get a feel, but I don't think Soto and Boris are really letting it known how they feel. But the one quote, I think it was BT, that said he's prepared to, what was it, not go toe-to-toe with Cohen, but prepared to...
Yeah, that's basically the gist of it. Yeah. You know, but not stare down either.
But prepared to compete, basically, yeah, with Steve Cohen.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
To get Juan Soto. I got to get the exact quote. I know we had it up earlier and then forgot it. But that was more encouraging. You read the same thing with Clappish. And how'd you feel as a Yankee, from a Yankee perspective, coming away with that?
Better than I did from what I just heard from Hoff. I thought it was a little bit more,
A
little bit more energy, a little bit more juice, a little bit more forceful, different presentation. I just want to go back to Hal for a second. As you're looking up the quotes here, I do want to say that, you know, projecting a conservative approach now, what Hoff read from Hal, that's fairly conservative. It wasn't over the top. As a matter of fact, the first two quotes were straight up boring, and the third one was a little inspirational, like, oh, okay, that makes me feel a little bit better. But that's the road that you should travel down if you're Hal Steinbrenner. The last thing, this is Business 101, the last thing that he should say is, there, under no circumstance can we allow him, even though this might make us feel better, think about how it would play out on the back end. It would actually hurt the Yankees. There's no way we can allow him to walk to the Mets. It would be crushing. It would be devastating. You know, because if you say that, nor should he say, right, we are prepared to do anything. We love Soto so much. We're going to walk to the end of the baseball world to make sure that we bring him back. Because if you're saying that, and not literally that, but if you're projecting that energy, guess who's smiling? Boris and Soto.
Right.
And, you know, the more that you empower them to get more money from Cohen, okay, the more complicated Hal's world becomes. Now, this is a very dangerous game. Now, Hal is worth, I think I read $1.8 billion. We know that Steve at this point is about $20 billion. Jeez. This is a game that Cohen can play forever. It's just, does he get bored or does he get turned off and maybe go in a different direction with three or four other players, which I don't think he will. He's going all in on Soto. So if one of the two walks away, it's going to be Hal out of more financial necessity than Cohen.
Right.
So we all know that. So anything that is said to fuel the fire of Soto and Boris squeezing more money out of this is detrimental to Hal.
I think it just
Should be conservative.
I think he was fine with that, but I wouldn't be encouraged after those quotes from him the way that I was with the
Clappish piece
from Clappish. Where I agree. Like, all right, he's ready to dance with Cohen, but you're right. Like at the end of the day, if Steve Cohen, like if something's up for auction, an art piece, a baseball player, and he wants it, and they're open to coming here, like you could say, well, what about Yamamoto or Ohtani? They didn't want really to come here. Yamamoto led the Yankees on, led the Mets on. He didn't want to come here. Ohtani never even got involved with them. He knew where he wanted to go. They wanted to stay on the West Coast and go to the Dodgers. Soto, all indications are he's open to going to the Mets, like legitimately open to going to the Mets. If Cohen wants him and he's legitimately open to playing in Queens for the Mets, then Steve Cohen is going to get... He's going to do whatever it takes to get him, assuming that he doesn't have like the, well, I'm not going to go to 750 or I'm not going to go to 8. Like, you also got to be smart about it just because it's the most fancy art piece in the world and everybody wants it.
It's got to be at a value that is not irresponsible.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So where's the market value? And then where does Cohen say, okay, well, if this is the market value, I want this piece so bad that I'm going to go here and blow out the market value by $50 million.
Okay.
60, whatever it may be. That's what's going to happen. And then if the market value comes up, then he again can say, okay, well, the market value's come up here. I'm going to again go to this extent, just like they did with Yamamoto. The difference is, I believe this time, Soto was willing to go to the Mets where Yamamoto never was. They played that game with Yamamoto. The Mets got to the point that they were at. He just went to the Dodgers once they reached that apex. With Soto, once they reached that apex, I believe he's going to take the most money.
Let me hit you with this real quick here. So what are these things we know? One we don't know.
Yeah.
We can only surmise. The one thing that we do know is that Steve Cohen, just based on his portfolio, has got the ability to play the long game, as we just said.
Yes.
Everybody knows that. Okay. What we don't know is, as the long game goes on, given his penchant for winning so many business deals, is he more likely to maybe get turned off by what he deems too aggressive or reckless from them? We don't know that. Like, there's a thought that, all right, here's more money, more money, more money, flush, more money, more money, more money, more money. But you don't accrue $20 billion worth of money if you get played.
Yeah, so you're saying Cohen being turned off by Boris and Soto.
Where he's where he almost looks at Boris almost like a peon.
100%.
Like, dude, get back in your place here. Yeah, we want him. We don't need him for that. And I wonder if that can be an emotional turnoff for Cohen. I don't know.
Yes, I think the most important thing is he's got to find out if it's legitimate, unlike Yamamoto, who wasn't legitimate. And they did get played to a certain extent because they took it to many levels. The flying to Japan, the dinner at Cohen's house, all those different things, the offer that they gave him. Like, the Mets gave him a legitimate offer. He just never wanted to be there. So this has to be different. I don't think Cohen is going to get played in this scenario. I think he's got to be careful and smart, and I think he will be. But I think this is a different feel to where he's going to have his... He'll say, okay, everybody's at 700. That's great. Here's my final offer, 750. Like, it can't just be the dance where, okay, well, the best offer is 650. Cohen goes up to 7. Oh, well, wait, the Yankees are up to 7 or whoever. The Phillies
but
are up
But I think
to
that's
seven.
How the game's going to play. Yeah, I think that when the offers come in, the Yankees will, and others will have a chance to match. They either will or they won't. Yeah. Then you're going to keep going back to Boris. Well, hey, we got this. We know what you offered to Steve, but Hal said he's going to do this. Like, that's the game that's going to be played.
Yeah, but it can't go. I think Cohen will maybe give it one. Like, let's say it starts at 650. Cohen says, okay, I'm at 7.
Mm-hmm.
And then they
you
come
say
back.
Final offer at that point?
Well, no, not at 7, but let's say, hypothetically, who knows the actual numbers, but let's say it starts at 650, Cohen says, okay, 650 is the market, I'm coming with 7.
Okay.
Then let's say the Yankees or Philly say, okay, well, we're going to go to 7 too. And Cohen says, all right, well, I'm going to go to 770, whatever it may be.
Uh-huh.
Like, at that point, I think you got to draw the line because...
From Cohen's perspective.
Yes, because even if the other teams come up, you know, let's say they go, all right, well, we're going to come up to 770. I mean, maybe you say one more round and you go, okay, I'll go to 8.
Yeah.
And this is it.
Like, yeah. Like, well, there's got to be that limit. There will be.
And I think it's going to be the second go-around. Like, I think it'll be at the 750 thing. Like, maybe going to 7 is one thing. If somebody else comes up to 7, then maybe he'll go a little bit above that.
Mm-hmm.
And then say, this is my line in the sand. You want to be a Met? This is your offer. Take it or leave it. And that's that.
There's no way I'd give him 750. I would be very reluctant to give him 7. I'm on the record with that. Hoff, I know you got a quote. Give me one sec here. This is playing out very interesting, though, from the Yankees' perspective. You look at who's involved here. So we know the Mets are involved, okay? The Red Sox are involved, and the Dodgers are involved. Well, to what degree with the Dodgers, we're not really sure, and there's going to be another mystery team, blah, blah, blah. But the Mets are trying to take over the city. The Red Sox are their Yankees' longtime chief rival, and the Dodgers just beat you in the World Series. So think about all the emotion that is staring in the face of the Yankees. I wonder, now I do agree with when Sal says that he's not, it's not a Yamamoto or well, forget about Ohtani. It's not a Yamamoto situation. Yamamoto was never coming here. I do, so I want people to hear me on this. I do believe there's a chance that Soto goes to Queens. I really do, and I've said that for a while now.
Yeah.
I also think that there's a chance that he really wants to stay with the Yankees, and the Mets and the Red Sox and the Dodgers have pulled into this to up the ante to get the Yankees bite.
We'll
that
find
is
out.
A possibility.
It is a possibility. We'll find out if that's a reality soon enough.